welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. Today with me, from Melbourne, I have Coralie Dimitriadis, who is a fearless feminist voice for the Southeastern diaspora. That's the way I always think about you, a fearless feminist voice. Welcome, Coralie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You also have a lot of hats. You're a writer, a performer, a best-selling poet. You create film and theatre with poetry, and you are also a single parent.
Yes, that's right.
So you have
that's right.
Which we both are. Coralie, tell me who Coralie is, because I know you. I've been to a lot of your readings. I've read your books. But tell me, who is Coralie?
Oh, that's a good question that I have not been asked. I guess I've changed a lot in the last 10 years. So I would say today I'm very into, promoting feminist voices. And when I talk about feminism, I'm talking more about freedom to be yourself as a woman, to live freely, and to have, you know, basic human rights and equality. And, you know, my parents were born in Cyprus. They're Cypriot migrants. They migrated to Australia in the 70s. And I've spent a lot of time in Cyprus as well, because I feel like it's my second home. And as my daughter gets older, I will be spending more time in Cyprus, because I just feel more free there, I guess.
Well, I think we've spoken about this before, but for all its shortcomings in Cyprus, freedom to walk the streets, as you call it, to actually feel safe and not worry about walking in the street, even late at night, is a very big plus of living in Cyprus, and not a luxury afforded in many communities.
No, not at all.
Especially for women.
Yeah, in Melbourne where I live, if it's dark, you shouldn't really be walking the street. And even if you're in an area where there's houses, and I don't do it. Even for example, if I have to go somewhere that's 10 minutes down the road, I will drive my car there and park it so I can drive home if I have to come home, you know, after say 9 o'clock, you know. So, but even at 9 o'clock, I feel scared. Once the sun goes down, but even like during the daytime, I mean, my sister, when she was younger, she was just walking in our neighborhood during the daytime, and someone tried to grab her and pull her into the car in the daytime.
Let's get to that. Recently, there's been a lot in the press about the rise in femicides in Australia. Is there a rise in the numbers, or is there a rise in the awareness and the publicity that these murders are getting?
I think there is a rise. I know that there's organisations and specific women that keep a tab on how many women have been killed in Australia due to femicide. And I think we're close to 50 so far. And I think that's more than this time. Yeah, that's definitely more than this time last year.
Something I read somewhere is that every 2 weeks there's a femicide, which is quite horrific when you think about it. Why is this happening? And why is this happening is a big question. But what I saw in some of the press I read about this is that we need to stop addressing it as violence against women. And we need to start speaking about the violence of men.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because there's this attitude that men need to pull up their socks and call out toxic masculinity. And I think there isn't enough dialogue about how do we open up the doors to make men more vulnerable. And how do we look at parenting and the way we're parenting our boys? I know, for example, you know, in the Greek community here where I live, it's very common, you know, for men my age who have children to tell their boys, you know, oh, boys don't cry, and, boys shouldn't be gay and just things like that. Like it's very common, and that boys should be like the macho boys, and I think that's a problem because if we don't open up the conversation with men, and talk about vulnerability and parenting and things like that, we're just going to continue the problem.
We're failing them because I remember my son must have been about 10, and within a period of 2 months, we lost his friend's father died. My son's adopted grandfather died, and my son's uncle in Thessaloniki died within a period of 2 months. And I caught my son really sad, and I said to him, "Come, what's wrong? Let's cry." And he says to me, "Mom, my dad said to me, boys don't cry." I said to him, "Dude, crying doesn't have a gender. And if you look at your father and you look at me, who usually cries?" And he laughed because my ex-husband's a bit of a dramatic Greek. So he laughed, and I said to him, "Come, let's cuddle. Come, sit with me, and let's cry together. Let's sit together, and if you want to cry, you cry." And I think it must have been quite a liberating experience for him, because it was very sad. It was very traumatic, because it was at least the 2 week exceptionally important. The adopted grandfather, someone he saw every week, and we had adopted him when we came to Cyprus. So to me, this thing of boys don't cry is a nightmare, that you think boys are not allowed to feel sad or not allowed to feel attached to people.
Yes, and also I think an issue that isn't really talked about a lot enough in the media is the effects of drugs and alcohol. We have a huge problem here with drugs and alcohol and rehabilitation, and there just isn't enough social services to support a change in men, really, especially if they're suffering from substance abuse because they can't deal with, their emotions, so they medicate them, and or they use women as punching bags because they can't deal with their emotions. Yeah, and also it's not just that as well. It's things like social media. Like, for example, I wrote this poem, which is in my book, She's Not Normal. It's called, Am I Allowed to Swear?
Yes, you are. It's part of your identity anyway. So please go ahead and be
So there
Coralie.
was a woman a couple of years ago that her husband set her car alight with the children in it. He doused them in petrol. He stopped the car, he doused them in petrol, and then he threw a light in and they all died. And I wrote a poem about that because in the media they were saying, oh, he's such a family man. And he had all these photos of how lovely their family were together. And I just said, I wrote a poem called A Fucking Asshole of a Man Killed His Wife. And I write about how, why doesn't the media just say he's an asshole? Like he killed his family. Anyway, so I posted this video for the first time ever on TikTok recently, and I was getting all these comments and people having a conversation, and then TikTok just takes it down and says that I am violating like it's hate speech. That's what they said. And then I complained and they put it back up, but they shadow banned it, which means I got no more comments after that. Like they've hit it, So even the social media platforms are misogynistic. They don't let women speak. They don't let women express their anger and their rage. They just want a specific angle.
Narrative.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
Now, I agree with you. A lot of the time when you see a lot of these family murders or femicides, it's couched in, "But he was a good member of the community." Fuck no, he wasn't. He killed his wife.
Yeah. I mean, we're allowed to say that. It's like we should be allowed to say things like that and also say things like we need more education about men being vulnerable. We can say both of those things. Why do we have to pick one? both are right. It's not a black and white situation. I write about a lot of my writing is empathetic towards men. I write a lot politically through the lens of love. I've dated men that have substance abuse disorders, and I've loved men with those issues, and I can see how it's so hard for men to be vulnerable. But I should still be able to say, publish that poem on TikTok and say, show my rage at the media and how it's portraying femicide, and also be able to write vulnerable poetry about a man that I love that, you know, is suffering from substance abuse and tapping into his vulnerability.
And I agree with you. I think the way that this is portrayed is that it's an either or. So
yeah, that's right.
You are either pro-men, which means you don't diss them, and you say this is a good man, what happened, but you're not allowed to say why it happened. Or the other side of it, that yes, this happened, and no, it's not on.
Mm.
It's not on to kill your wife, and you've got to say things by their name. You have to say things by their name, because I think it just makes the problem worse if you don't say things by their name. Because then it whitewashes situations, and then men continue not being allowed to be vulnerable, so it creates a cycle. So I found that when I read this in one of the articles about talking about men's violence, I think it's a really interesting perspective of talking about the femicide and in terms of vulnerability of women, but also talking about men and why this is happening and how we can perhaps change why this is happening and lessen the numbers.
Yeah, I think
so. And maybe we need more champions of men saying this.
Absolutely. I think definitely we need to amplify, you know, men's voices as well in this space. It's very difficult because I was at a poetry event recently, and there was a man there after I performed. He came up to me and he said that once he was walking down the street and there was a man that was, you know, not treating his girlfriend very well. He was yelling in her face. He was pushing her. And he went up to the man and said, you know, hey, just calm down. And this man attacked him and permanently damaged his eye. Like, he's blind in one eye.
Whoa.
So we
and
talk
what did
about,
this man do about it?
What do you mean?
Did he report it, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm sure he reported, but at the end of the day, he's still got, like, you know,
one eye less.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is like, there's all this, like, anger from certain women's groups. Oh, men need to pull up their socks. Oh, they need to call out toxic masculinity. It's not that easy for men to do that, because as we can see, you know, men are also getting murdered, attacked by men, you know. So it's not that easy, you know, but there just isn't enough being done. I mean, just at the very basic level, you know, educating parents on the way they raise their children in terms of, you know, not allowing boys to be vulnerable. I mean, maybe it's too late in this generation, but maybe for future generations. I like to look at future generations. I think there's only so much we can do with this generation.
But I don't think we need to discount this generation, though. I think we need to start working on this generation and working towards, in parallel to the next generation.
Yes, absolutely.
I think this generation is in trouble, and I think that's why you're seeing a breakout of so many conflict zones around the world. I don't think it's unrelated.
And also, I think a lot of it's to do with the media, because, you know, I used to write a lot more opinion articles than I do these days. You know, I remember, like, you know, 10 years ago, I would get like one published a week. Now I can barely get an article published because the media has become so conservative. Social media has become so conservative, like I mentioned that example of the poem. And so we live in quite a conservative world where, you know, we're not valuing, you know, women's work, women's opinions. And so everything just becomes normalized and And then the cycle just continues.
I agree with you. I think this illusion that social media has liberated us is an illusion, because I see, I mean, I do a lot on gender-based violence, but I also do a lot on the conflicts in Gaza, in South Sudan, and whatever. And I see what happens when I say something that's out of line, in inverted commas, and I get trolled and I get blocked. So I agree with you, this conservative world that we're living in, although the illusion is it's not a conservative world, is a real issue, because we really need to find a way to amplify the voice of every vulnerable person we know, regardless of their gender. It needs to be
Yes.
okay to be vulnerable. It needs to be okay to say, I messed up, I'm sorry.
Yes,
Or I need
absolutely.
help.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Regardless, again, regardless of the gender, this thing that it's okay for women to ask for help, but men are strong, so they don't need help, is bullshit.
Oh, men need help. They really do. I know because I have gotten close to many men who are struggling, and I really do believe in rehabilitation. I really do. But you can't rehabilitate if you don't have empathy and if you don't get to the root of the problem. And the root to me is men being afraid to be vulnerable.
And I was just going to say that you can't re rehabilitate easily if you are living within a community that makes that difficult. It makes me difficult for men to ask for help or to be open to being vulnerable. If they're open to be vulnerable in the communities we're living in, a lot of the time they're beaten up, marginalized, silenced. So we've got to almost recreate the environment we're living in and help change the narrative. I don't know how we're going to do it, but I agree with you. We've really gone about this the wrong way. And unless we change the narrative and make it easy for men to ask for help and address the fact that it's not femicide, it's male violence, which is not just one-dimensional, it's multidimensional, I think the numbers are just going to carry on being on increasing, because I think Greece has also seen an increase in femicides.
Yes, I know. There was that case of that girl that went to the police station and said that she was being stalked, and they didn't do anything. And then she leaves the police station, and he kills her.
But even the serial killer in Cyprus a few years ago, that a man got away with killing eight people because the police weren't listening to the case of vulnerable women. And they weren't evaluating people in positions of power correctly, because the man that was committing the crimes was within the system and he was not being evaluated correctly. So I think it's a really messed up system, but we really, really need to be talking about the fact that it's okay for anyone to feel vulnerable, and they need to feel safe to feel vulnerable.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, when we, and I agree with you that it is a male violence issue. Like, femicide is just the last point, you know? So, like the final straw. So, I think it can feel overwhelming when you're working in the feminist space for change, but I try to just do look at things on a smaller level as well, which is just, supporting men's voices that do want to speak about this issue, about vulnerability, and just getting as many men on site as we can that can talk about these things, and just amplifying the voices of women, getting our arts organizations and our community organizations behind strong feminist voices. Because I think that matters as well, because historically we've been mostly hearing from men, but if we amplify the voices of women more in the arts and media space, that will mean that the new generation that comes up will see those voices and hear those voices.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. You generally try to cover issues to shift narratives that suppress the marginalized. Am I correct?
Yes.
Another subject you cover quite well is single parenting.
Yes. Well, I yes.
And cultural repression, which I feel find is quite a strong issue, especially in Cyprus. Tell me about your journey with single parenting.
Well, when my daughter was three, I got divorced. We co-parented for a while, but then she decided she wanted to live with me. I think one issue that really isn't spoken about in the single parenting space is even though you leave someone, they can still be in your life in a negative way as a single mother. So it's we need to talk about this kind of violence as well, because I think it's not it's very difficult to speak about it as a single mother, especially for example in Australia. If you're in the family law courts, you're not allowed to talk about it.
What, you're not allowed to talk about what the negativeness of single parent, of
In
this
the
other
public,
parent?
yeah, in a public space, yeah, like as yeah, you're not allowed to publish or talk about in a public space issues to do with the case, you know. So it's like a kind of a gag order in a way on single mums. So, and in Australia, the default position of the law courts was 50-50. Now they're starting to see that that is not the best for the child. So in the last year, they've taken out that rule now that it's just in the what's in the best interest of a child, but not 50-50.
I find that 50-50 quite arbitrary.
Oh, it's really had a detrimental effect on my daughter. I always knew she needed to be with me more, but unfortunately, I didn't get the support from the law courts because at the end of the day, if you are trying to get somewhere in the law courts with someone that has a lot more financial, than you're just going to lose.
I have to admit, Coralie, I was very blessed because I was living in Greece at the time when I decided to leave my husband. I was referred to an exceptional lawyer, and I said to him, "You know what? I'm expecting inheritance. I will pay, and we'll carry on." He says to me, "No, we're going to carry on because your timing is good, and you will pay me when you get the money." And he was very, very much. Because I'd asked for recommendations for a lawyer who was pro-child. I wanted what was good for my son. And I eventually got custody to leave the country with him. And when I said to my lawyer, "You know what, I'm really concerned about leaving the country. Will my son be happy?" And my lawyer said to me, "Leave your son out of the picture. Where will you be happy? If you will be happy in Cyprus, your son will be happy in Cyprus. If you won't be happy in Greece and you stay here, your son won't be happy. So your first concern is you've got to go somewhere where you will be okay and your son will be perfect." And in Greece, the law says the child goes with the mom. And my ex-husband tried to contest that, and the lawyer said, "You know what? Cut the nonsense. I'm a lawyer. I wouldn't get my kids. I know every loophole, and I wouldn't get my kids. So stop this nonsense." So I was very blessed because I had a lawyer who was on the side of my son.
But it seems like in that case, it wasn't just the lawyer, it was actually the legal system. Like in Australia, the mother doesn't get the law isn't favored to the mother at all. So therefore,
No, but the dad had advised that. What I'm trying to say is that I also could have got a lawyer that could have been on my husband's side. I actually had a, it was a good system, but I also had a lawyer that was a good human and was truly on the side of my son. He wanted what was good for the child, which I agree with you, the system helped him, but I was also had a good lawyer, and it wasn't a case of, he also offered to represent me without money. I did pay him in the end. But I agree with you, the system does help. But it's also a system that's patriarchal. It's quite weird. Anyway, as you said, in Australia, the system didn't support you Anyway.
Yeah, and the lawyers here, they just want your money. They don't give a shit. They just want your money. I mean, my lawyer didn't achieve anything and I lost all this money. So I felt that my lawyers were quite deceptive, actually. And I do write about it in my in one of my books. I think you just give me the pills. But yeah, I've been very disappointed by the family law system here, and I feel the family law system also contributes to domestic violence, and maybe the high rate of femicide, because it's very hard to leave, if you don't have a system that supports you.
But I'm agreeing with you, but that's what I'm agreeing with you, that it is, the lawyer does make a difference. I'm not saying the system doesn't, because when I went back to my lawyer a few years later and I said, you know what, I'm not getting any maintenance. Should we take him back to court? And my lawyer said to me, how are you doing? So I said, fine. He says to me, you know you're not going to get money. So why do you want to go to court, not get any more money, and pay my legal fees? I mean, I must have got a one in a million lawyer, but having the wrong lawyer does certainly exacerbate the system and exacerbate the fact that women don't leave that easily, because the lawyer tells them, where are you going to go? What did you do? You know the system's not going to support you. How are you going to support yourself?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I agree with you. Like, we need more good lawyers in the system.
Now, I'm eternally grateful to this man, because I've never, whenever I tell people about this lawyer, they said, you know, you must have got a lawyer in a million. So I said, you know what? I actually sent out a message to the universe. I want a lawyer who's going to protect my son.
That's great.
How difficult is, how stigmatized is single parenting in Australia? How difficult is the, is it to find a good balance? In addition to the fact that they force you to have 50-50 initially.
Look, it's still stigmatized. We do have a very big, migrant community in Australia, and unfortunately, they're very backwards in their mentality. So, being a single mum is still really stigmatized. Like, there's something wrong with you if you're a single mum. Things like, oh, you might not get invited to certain things, because you're a single mum. And also in terms of, employment, and I feel, because I've been a single mum for a long time now, almost 15 years, and I would say that my experience has been that I'm surprised at the bullying I've experienced as a single mother, that I just don't think is necessary, but it's very easy to bully someone that's vulnerable. So it happens. And the exploitation as
Bullying of the
well.
system or people around you?
Both.
And I agree with you with that. I mean, I've just come out, the fact that I was a single parent meant I couldn't get a full-time job, because Cyprus has a system, doesn't have a system to support childcare, the affordable childcare. And the result of that is that I've come out as a pensioner on a very, very low pension, because I did not work for the last 20 years. I haven't worked an 8-hour day.
Yeah, well, that's what happens.
And no one takes this into consideration. So I'm at this age of, equally vulnerable age of 66, oh, with a pension of 575 euros a month. Doesn't cover my utility bills.
Yeah,
And
I
people
mean,
don't take this into the picture, nor do the younger, what challenges me is, nor do a lot of the younger feminists realize that fighting the good fight and fighting for things like the gender pay gap or equal rights is not as simple as a word. It actually has real, real, really serious consequences.
I mean, I think that the feminists of today just stomp on single mums. Like, I've had so many experiences, but if we look at, for example, a previous Prime Minister of Australia, the only female Prime Minister of Australia in the past, Julia Gillard, on the day that she gave a speech about misogynism in Parliament, on that same day, the media didn't cover the fact that she had like changed the laws for single parents and cut our social services. But everyone was applauding her for her great speech, but in the meantime she's shafting single mums in the background and everyone ignores her because who gives a shit about single mums?
But you do know that Margaret Thatcher is always a woman prime minister. Margaret Thatcher is the one who also dissed the single parents because the low-income families, which is usually the single parents, she got rid of their milk, their free lunches at school. Who cares about the fact that you're screwing the vulnerable? You're just making money, putting more money in the treasury. So I agree with you. It's really harsh. I don't think people, unless you've walked the walk of single parenting, I don't think you understand the challenges.
Yeah, I'm surprised at some of the experiences I've had. I'm actually because I'm working on a non-fiction book, Not Till You're Married, about how a strict religious and/or migrant upbringing manifests in the adult, and I have a whole chapter in there about the discrimination I've experienced as a single mother across all facets of my life. And I think it's not really spoken about at all, especially the bullying of single mothers by other women, I think is not discussed openly. Or I think people just don't take us seriously. Like, oh, what would you know? You're a single mom. Like,
No, but they also don't realize. I remember when I left my husband and I came to Cyprus and I was trying to get my life together and I got a little bit of inheritance. And I remember my brother and sister showering criticism on me of really getting my act together, assuming that I had the luxuries they had, which is good marriages. And then my sister came to stay with me for 3 weeks. And at the end of the 3 weeks, she says to me, "You know what? I'm never ever going to open my mouth again because I now realize what a strain it is to be a single parent. What a weight you have on your shoulder to be a single parent of a child that you don't have the luxury of the other parent." So I'm really grateful for the fact that she actually stepped away and apologized for the bullying that was, I was being bullied. But you're not doing good enough. You should be spending more money. Or why are you letting giving in to your son? And I would say, you know, it's not that easy when you're a single parent to be harsh all the time. Sometimes you don't have the energy, so you just do give in. It's simple as that. Or you don't have the time, or you don't have the money. So I'm really grateful for the fact that she actually acknowledged it and said to me, "You know what? Very, 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 very proud of the fact of you doing this alone, and really apologize for the fact that we have not walked in your shoes and we've assumed we can pass judgment on you and tell you how to lead your life."
Yeah, that's true. And it's also as well like the judgment, like, oh, well, you chose to be a single mum, so deal with it.
As if it's a choice.
Yeah, but that's how you get treated.
Now, I know, but I agree. I think one of the, in addition to the financial, I think it's the social one of, well, you don't fit into the social construct of a couple, so you're marginalized in a lot of social events. No one takes that into consideration. And I think that's the one that's quite hurtful because social is the one that helps you battle the challenges. The nurturing from community is the one that should help you battle the challenges. But anyway, I want to know, you've done a lot of work. You've written books, you've written poetry, and you've done a documentary. I'm really interested to find out about Yaya Yamo. It's your semi-documentary.
It's a no, it's actually a poem.
But you turned it into documentary.
No,
A film.
it's a poetry film of one of my poems, but it's going to be screened at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival.
So tell me about it.
It's a poem that I wrote when my grandma passed away. I was recently divorced at the time, or separated, and I wasn't in touch with my family because things were not good with them because they were trying to make me go back to my marriage. And I in the poem I talk about how my grandmother, was forced to marry someone she didn't want to marry. She was forced to send my mother and my aunties to Australia because she didn't have a dowry. And so I guess I'm talking about three generations of women, my grandmother, my mother's generation, and then me, who actually left my marriage. So I kind of broke the cycle of leaving. And so yeah, it's a film that I actually am looking at the moment at where I can screen it in Cyprus. It's available in Australia to view on our federal media broadcaster. But I want to see if I can how I can get it screened in Cyprus. It will be part of an exhibition for the Bafos Theatre excavation project. Like, they're going to have a exhibition of different artworks, and it's going to be included in that. But I want to include. I've been trying to organise some a screening or something of the film.
Well, maybe I can help you. Let's talk about it because I'm now doing part-time work for the Single Parents Association.
Okay. Yeah,
So
sure, we
maybe we
can.
can do it through there, or maybe we can do it through the Cypress Women's Lobby. I mean, it's very much a feminist issue and a cultural issue.
Yes,
So
yes.
let's talk about it and see what we can do because I do think films, the visual, the audio visual has a lot of draw. And I also think the audiovisual is nice because it can start a conversation. So you can have an event, but then have a Q&A afterwards to raise a few real questions.
Yeah, well, I do plan to come to Cyprus next year. So, yeah, it's something I can do. We can definitely look at. That poem's in my book, Just Give Me the Pills, as well. So, I wrote that poem like, 10 years ago, and it's only now being made into a film. So, it's really exciting to actually see it come to life and to recite the poem in the ancient Bafos Theatre in Cyprus.
And this is in English or in Cypriot?
In English.
Good. Of all your work, is there any piece of work that actually stands out for you? I know every piece of work for a poet, a writer, every piece of work is a baby, a child. But is there
Yes.
any one that actually stands out more in terms of anything?
I think that would be like, my books that aren't published yet. So I've written a love story set in Melbourne and Cyprus. That I'm trying to get published, and my non-fiction book, Not Till You're Married. I think they're my two very big works. I do have a short story collection coming out in October called The Mother Must Die. And I've those po those stories were finished a long time ago, but only now have I found a publisher for them. All my poetry books, Love and Fuck Poems, Just Give Me the Pills and She's Not Normal, they're all self-published. So this is going to be like my first official publication with an Australian publisher.
That's great. I mean, that means you have made it, in inverted commas, because you don't need to self-publish. Someone is recognizing your worth.
Well, they're not publishing my poetry because the poetry academics here are very conservative. But it doesn't matter because I have my own publishing company and my own distributor because my poetry books are bestsellers in Australia for poetry. So I've been able to just harness my distributor to help me get my books out into bookshops and stuff. But yeah, actually getting an Australian publisher to publish one of my works is a big deal to me, because it is a lot of work as a single mother to self-publish your own work and to do everything on your own. And I'm hoping that my novel and my nonfiction book will get picked up soon, so they can go out into the world as well, because I'm really excited about those.
Well, kudos to you that you actually brought out two poetry books and they're bestsellers in Australia. And you self-published and you self-distributed. So it's really kudos to you. Very hard work, I'm sure. But I agree with you, the fact that an Australian publisher's picked you up, firstly, it relieves you of a lot of responsibility, but means your distribution might be broader.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's important for me as a Cypriot writer as well, because we have the largest, one of the largest Cypriot communities in the diaspora in the world in here in Australia. And yet we don't have any Cypriots like in mainstream fiction. We've got Greeks, not many women, mostly men, but no Cypriots. So.
I don't know if the same thing happens in Australia that happened in South Africa, that the Cypriot community amalgamates with the Greek community.
That's why, and everyone just thinks, oh, I'm just Greek. But it's like our preoccupations are so different. We're a completely separate country. We're occupied, we're colonized. Like, they're still using their military bases on our land. It does frustrate me, and I do talk about that in my book, Not Till You're Married. I have a whole section about Cyprus and how, we just get lumped in with the Greeks when we've got a completely different culture and
I have a lot
identity.
of. I am very challenged when we living in Cyprus. Now, I agree with you. When I was in South Africa, this challenge of being, well, I'm Greek Cypriot. I'm not Greek.
Yes.
Okay, in South Africa, it started off because of in apartheid, they were actually pushing us away because we weren't the Aryan race, the immigrant community. So it was easier to put together the Greek-speaking community. But even to date, I mean, I was at an event and this young woman, Greek Cypriot, Australia, South African, was talking about her Hellenism and then mentioned to me, you know what, as Cypriots, we don't have identity. And I said to her, girlfriend, what did you just say when you spoke? I said, I'm not criticizing, but we need to start checking what we say before we criticize the way people perceive us. But I agree with you. I came to Cyprus and we hear a lot of input from the diaspora. Okay, and they give money for elections and they have opinions. And I get so angry because when I see who's at the table of the diaspora community, it's Greek Cypriot. It's not Cypriot. Doesn't include Turkish Cypriots, okay? And it's a comment I did have with the Cyprus Diaspora Forum that was held at the beginning of the year. It was a really incredible event, and I'm very grateful to have been on the panel because it was a really great event. But my criticism or my comment to them was, you know what, if you really want to be Cypriot, you really need to include the East Cypriot, Turkish Cypriot voices. You ne
Yes.
really need to open up spaces for, because we're all Cypriot. And
That's
it's
right.
Cyprus is not
That's
Greek
right.
Cypriot. It's got so
Yes.
many
Yes.
wonderful dimensions and voices. So just putting a Greek Cypriot voice is really not on because we want to go forward as a Cypriot community. And I agree, we're very different from the Greeks. Very, very different.
Yeah, and I think that's because, in the diaspora, they're still very backwards. I mean, we had an event at the Cypriot community recently where there was a screening of a documentary about a Turkish Cypriot and Greek Cypriot that walked across Cyprus. I think it's called
Oh, yes,
Journeying.
Stavros. What's his name? Stavros.
Yeah, Stavros and Yalcin. Yeah. And it was the first event ever held in the Cypriot community where there was like a Turkish Cypriot there, like promoting their art. So it was like a big thing. And I still think that the Cypriot community is a bit backwards. Like, even the Diaspora Forum was organized, I think, by someone that grew up in the diaspora but lives in Cyprus. Yeah, so I think the Cypriot diaspora is backwards still. I mean, I tried to be involved in that festival too, and I wasn't included. So, you
No,
know.
there was a lot of criticism. I think it was also a first event, and I think they walked the path. They knew they did the same thing, but there was we a lot of us had input about the fact that we've got such wonderful voices from the diaspora and locally that come from the diaspora that are not Greek Cypriot. You've got to include the multiculturalism that is Cyprus because we are not just Greek Cypriot. And we have lovely people in Australia, in South Africa, in the US. So why are we not using all the Cypriots to give the true space of the. And that's why when they start talking about politics and giving money to elections, I panic. Because when they give money to elections, this means they're not feeding a true United Cyprus solution. They're feeding a Greek Cypriot solution.
Well, yeah, like, for example, I do have some people that get angry at me when I say I'm Cypriot and I'm not Greek Cypriot. And then I say, no, Cyprus. They say, oh, no, Cyprus is part of Greece. We wouldn't have been we would have been part of Greece if it wasn't for colonization. And, we have to say that we're Greek, like, we are Greek. And it's, I'm just like, no, I'm going to say I'm Cypriot.
No, anyway, if you actually, I mean, we are taught standard Greek in the schools, but when you go into the dialogue, the dialect is different, and the references are different.
And even now they're trying to document the language.
I wish they would, because in the beginning, when I first arrived in Cyprus, I was not going to learn the dialect because I just perfected my Greek after living for 15 years in Greece. But the more I learn the dialect, the more I love the dialect
I love it. I love
of
talking.
how it
I've even
explains.
got some Cypriot poems in my new book because I love it.
Well, you know what? Because I'm Cypriot, having grown up in South Africa, I didn't speak Cypriot at home. We spoke Greek at home because it was the Greek-speaking community. So to me, a lot of the dialect is new and uncharted territory, but the more I learn about it and the more I use it, it's wonderful.
Yeah,
I
it's
don't use it that
great.
often because some of the words are not part of my easy conversation, but the dialect actually is wonderful and it is different.
And
It is
even now,
different.
like I
Even
have this
now, like I have this
poem,
poem.
it's called Bien Duti, who is she? And when I perform my poetry here in Australia, I'll do it in Cypriot and I won't translate it. I want people to try and understand what I'm saying from the way that I say
The
it.
way that I say it. And does that work?
Yeah, people love it. People like what
Oh,
people would
good.
say to me, I don't care what you were saying. It was cool.
Exactly. Well, you transferred a mood. What you
Yeah, a
said was a
mood.
mood, and
Yeah, a
that's what's
mood.
important. Okay. Now, I agree with you. This thing about the diaspora only bring Greek Cypriot, it actually angers me beyond belief because we are not. If we actually want to change the status quo on Cyprus, which is not a good position to be in with the division and the Green Line and more people moving towards a two-state solution, we've got to stop the diaspora's input of a Greek Cypriot identity. I mean, I often use the one or two words that I love in Turkish, and I'll use it, and people look at me and I'll say, you know what, like the word, I use it, it suits me, you know what I'm talking about, so get over yourself. Anyway, we're coming towards the end of this conversation. Is there anything you want to say or talk about before we close?
I can do that poem if you want. Did you want me to do a poem?
Oh, I'd love that. And we will. So let's close and then you do the poem. Okay, so I'm really. Which poem are you going to do? Yayamo?
I'll do the Bien Duti, the one, the Cypriot one.
Oh, perfect. Oh, perfect. So, Coralie, I'm really glad to have spoken with you again. Next time I will make a bigger effort to come and see you, or we've got to make an opportunity to meet and carry on this fearless fight, because I think fearlessness is a quality we all need to bring out of ourselves, because it's the only way we're actually going to change the world.
Yes, absolutely.
So thank you,
I agree.
Coralie, and to the listeners, stay tuned for Bien Doti, which in English means sushi. And look forward to seeing you when you're next here. The floor is yours.
And is your audience mostly Cypriot or English? Like, I can do an English poem after the Cypriot one.
Okay, do them both, because I think that it would include the Turkish Cypriots. Anyone's listening. So English is, do them both.
All right. Okay, so I'll do the Cypriot one first. Okay, so Bien Doti and Gini belli, Gini που αφήνει το κοπελούιν της και γυρίζει, Gini παλαβή, η χαζή, Gini αλήτησα, η πουτάνα που κουβαλά τον παγιοφεμινισμό, Gini αρνητική. Εν είναι η κοινωνία το πρόβλημα, αλλά Gini πελή. Ανεσιόπουσεν τελείων, όλων πάνω στη κελέ μας, φεμινισμό, ρασισμό, όλα τα σκατά. Όι, εν την καγιό πουθενά, εν διασκέδαση που θέλω, όι βάσανα. Να πάει στο καλό, κι αν θέλει να αλλάξει λίγο, ξέρει τον αριθμό μου.
Wow.
She's not normal. Why isn't she normal? Why can't she be normal? Why can't she say normal things? She's not normal. Why can't she be normal? She makes me feel really uncomfortable. I can't, because she's not normal. Why can't she be normal and do normal things and speak in normal ways and say normal things and do normal things? Like, just be normal. God, it's just so infuriating. It makes me cringe. It makes me feel shit. Why can't she be normal? Why can't she be like us? Why? What's wrong with her? There's nothing wrong with me. There's something wrong with her and her friends and people like her. What's wrong with them? Why can't they not just be like us, like just normal? It's weird. It must be her parents or something went wrong. Something happened. And now she's just not normal. I wish she was. She makes me feel terrible. God. I hope she finds the help she needs. I hope she gets what she needs and finds what she needs. I really do. I really hope. I really pray that she does get the help that she needs so she can just be normal. And then I won't have to feel like this. Why can't her life be normal, like the things that she does in her life? Why can't they be normal? Why? I don't understand. There's a way things should be done. What's wrong with her? Why is she like that? I don't get it.
Thank you, Coralie. And to the listeners, thank you for listening, and to Coralie, let's both stay safe.
Yes, thank you. See you later.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.